going on, everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say that you have started off 2018 extremely well, because you are definitely in the right place to learn all about the latest news that happened in animation, including getting a little bit of my thoughts as well. And for this episode, we are going to start 2018 off by looking into a canceled animated series, but it definitely is worth talking about considering that the idea is actually very interesting. Then we will be talking about the next animated feature that will be released on Blu-ray as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Then we will be talking about Animaniacs, and yes, it shall be coming back. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the trailer of an upcoming Cartoon Network series. And then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And for our first story right over here, we are going to be talking about an animator that has been getting a bit of a name for himself, and some people who follow animation news or would know a bit about animation, they might find this name a little bit familiar. And I'm talking, of course, about Shannon Tindall. Now, Tindall is the kind of person that would be hopping from one animation studio to the next, and he would leave a little bit of his print all around the animation industry. He has worked in numerous of TV shows and movies, from works like Fairly Odd Parents to Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends to Coraline to The Croods. But what I'm going to be talking about right over here is one little instance where he worked at Disney Television Animation. And, there is one more thing that I want to mention about Tindall, actually. It's probably his most well-known thing that he is credited to work on, is that Tindall is credited to be the creator, the person who thought of the idea of the critically acclaimed Laika animated feature Kubo and the Two Strings. Now, going back to what I was talking about, yes, Tindall, he wanted to work, or he did work a little bit at Disney Television Animation. And he had an idea for an animated series he wanted to pitch for Disney, but sadly, Disney said no to it. But this week, he decided to reveal a little bit about his idea that he had, and just wanted to share it with the world, just showing off the little work that he has actually done for it, and just show off this little cool idea just to know how audiences would react to it. And that idea is actually an animated series based on the popular Disney attraction, The Haunted Mansion. Now, so far, the only thing that we know about it or that Shannon Tindall actually made for it is just a little teaser trailer for what would have been the series. And in the trailer, all we saw is just we were entering in the corridors of the mansion, and then suddenly we see this giant painting of a wrecked ship going through giant waves. And then suddenly, out of the blue, from those giant waves, we see an African-American woman coming out of that painting, like just getting out of there with a sigh of relief. It was like, oh, thank God, I just need to get out of there. And that's pretty much it. Pretty much hinting that this African-American woman would actually be one of the main characters of this animated series. And on top of that, Tindall even credited all the people that did actually work on this trailer in particular. He mentioned that it's not just Tindall who worked on it, but it's also a few artists from Summon In, including Matt Williams and Rachel Reyes. And also the voiceover work in that trailer was done by Marsai Martin, which you may know from Blackish. So that was pretty much all that was revealed and all that we know from this animated series. And on top of that, Tyndall even revealed a little bit as to why is it that he wanted to create a series based on The Mansion. And using my source here from the Animation Magazine, he stated, and I quote, "My goal was to take inspiration from all the backstories created by the artists at WED, now known as Walt Disney Imagineering, and stitch it into one giant narrative. The story would span several years and focus on different characters, but add up to one big interconnected story." Now, he didn't really mention as to why is it that Disney didn't agree onto making this Haunted Mansion series. All we know is that Shannon Tyndall wanted to create a show like this, but it didn't really happen, and the most that we got is this teaser trailer, and that's pretty much it. Now, coincidentally enough, this is not the first time that The Mansion had this idea, or they wanted to create this big project based on the ride, but it never really happened. This is not the only thing. It's not just the animated series. There are definitely other different projects that pretty much got canceled, or they pretty much ended up being dead. In a way, both figuratively and literally, considering that we are talking about The Mansion. There was at one point, ironically, by Disney Television Animation again, there was at one point they wanted to do an animation an animated special based on the ride, and it would have had the character designs, or at least the art style, by Gris Grimley. I remember that they would advertise it a little bit that this would be a thing, but then suddenly it never got mentioned again. Like, who the fridge knows what happened to it? Maybe I didn't fully check on the news as to why it never came to be, but I remember there was some news that popped out mentioning that they wanted to do an animated special with Gris Grimley's art style, and I don't know, it just suddenly disappeared at one point. But probably the most famous project that didn't happen based on The Mansion was actually an entire film reboot directed by acclaimed director and major Mansion fan Guillermo del Toro. Now, that was something that people really hyped themselves up on, but sadly, it never really happened. But then again, that is one thing that Guillermo del Toro is kind of known for, not only for being a great director, but also thinking up of all these crazy ideas, and they sadly never happened. I mean, there are plenty of other projects like that. There was At the Mountain of Madness, there was his Hellboy 3, and then also recently, something that got canceled, Pinocchio, that would have an anti-fascist message where it would be set during the time of Mussolini. So I guess The Mansion would be another one into that giant collection right over there. But then again, who knows if he would actually go ahead and actually make it. But anyways, going back into The Mansion itself. Now, I just want to have a bit of a quick summary for those of you who might not actually know what the Haunted Mansion is. Basically, it is one of, if not the most popular and beloved original Disney attraction that you would find all around the Disney parks. Not just in Disneyland, but also in Walt Disney World and in Tokyo Disneyland. And there are other places like Disneyland Paris and in Hong Kong Disneyland, they would have their own different version of the mansion. And it was opened in 1969, so as I'm recording this, it's going to be very soon that the ride would actually be 50 years old, like, holy crap. And the plot narrative of that attraction is that you are going into this big mansion and you are given a tour. But the thing is, in this mansion, there are a total of 999 spirits and ghosts, and your tour guide is this invisible spirit that you cannot see. You can only hear his voice, called the Ghost Host, which is masterfully done by Paul Frees. Probably his best voiceover work, honestly. And I will have to say, though, that I do have to agree that it is one of, if not the best, best theme park attraction, period. Not just by Disney, but just ever. And a lot of people do agree it is one of the best original attractions that have ever been created. The technology that has been done in there, even if it's been there for decades, they even overshadow some of the most current attractions that are out at Disney. It really is phenomenal, and every note that they try to hit in there, like technology-wise, story-wise, all the different characters that are in there, it is perfect. It is top-notch to create an unforgettable and really atmospheric experience. It really is the kind that Disney rides wish to be. However, even though I do agree that it is one of the best Disney rides in there and one of the best rides that I have ever ridden, I am honestly scared of that ride. I'm not gonna lie. I am the kind of person that is a bit of a chicken when it comes to haunted houses in general, period. I just don't like the feeling of going into an environment where I feel like I'm going to die. Like, I don't like this idea that I might go into a situation where I'm in this dark, empty, creepy room, and then there might be some kind of crazy supernatural killer on the loose. I don't know. I'm not a fan of that feeling. And this is not just with the mansion. This is just like with haunted houses in general. I would just be the kind of guy on the side that would have a low tolerance of that thing. And I would just be on the corner. Okay, you guys have fun. You go in there. I'll wait in the corner. Like, holy crap. And yeah, sometimes I would get teased by it, by family and friends. And I don't know the feeling, man. Honestly, I just don't like the sensation of going into a big mansion where there are tons of ghosts in there, where I would question about the fate of my life. And then I realize it could actually be too late when I go into the attic and I see a ghost bride wielding a hatchet looking at me like I am going to be her next victim. And she is looking for my neck in order to chop it off, realizing, oh crap, I'm going to die, am I? So yeah, I'm not really a big fan of dying. So excuse me for thinking that rides like the Haunted Mansion, where it's made to be scary, and I think is scary, and I would rather want to go in a happy attraction, like It's a Small World, where I can feel happy. So excuse me for thinking that the scary ride is scary, and that the happy ride is happy. But enough of that, let's go back into the animated series. I thought I'd just give a little bit of a commentary on that thing, and at least my personal thoughts to just share with you guys. Have a little bit of a heart-to-heart. But anyways, let's go back into the animated series. I completely understand why Tindall wanted to create a series like this, and why is it in general, why some people like Guillermo del Toro and Gris Grimley wanted to go and create something based on the mansion, but sadly, it couldn't really happen. Because when you do think about the plot narrative and all the different characters inside the mansion, like I said before, Disney really nailed it beautifully. And there are tons of materials that, if given to the right hands, they can create a phenomenal story with it. They would be capable of taking an amazing story, something that already exists, and they can really expand upon it to tell a very fascinating story that could blend some dark elements with some comedy to keep it within the tone of the attraction itself. And there's already a major fan base for it, so of course there's going to be a lot of people that would jump into it, and they would be so on board into checking something like that out. But how it never really happened, I guess it would be more Disney's decision. I guess in a sense, maybe they don't want to go all Pirates of the Caribbean for it and try to completely exploit it. Maybe they just want to go and keep the mansion as just an attraction. Or either that, maybe they're just too traumatized by what happened to the 2003 film starring Eddie Murphy. Maybe they just don't want to go ahead and try to really have that happen again. Like, they don't want to experience that entire thing. So they don't want to really go and take the risk and just keep the attraction as the attraction itself. And I mean, it is true that it is a very rare breed to find an original Disney ride, because nowadays when Disney would make a new attraction, it would always be based on their already existing properties, rather it be like Frozen or Zootopia and stuff like that. So it's very rare that you would find original characters, rather it be like the hitchhiking ghost or the pirate prisoners with the dog with keys, or Figment from Journey into Imagination. Those characters are actually very rare. So maybe Disney wants to go and try to preserve that and keep the mansion as, original theme park characters that you can only find in there. Maybe that could be the reason why they're not on board with all the different projects that they're handed out. But then again, yeah, there is some strong potential that they could do with all these characters in order to create, rather it be like an entire TV show out of it, or even an entire movie. So who knows why Disney didn't want to do it, but I do understand why Shannon Tindall want to go and actually do this. But keep in mind, though, there is something that I do want to point out about the mansion, is that it's not always just stuck in the Disney parks. There have been little moments that it did jump into different forms of media. Maybe this one didn't really count because it was released a little bit before the Eddie Murphy movie, but there was that one time when the ghost actually did make an appearance in the House of Mouse, and even in the House of Villains, where the hitchhiking ghost actually is a part of the Disney Villains crew. There is also, let me try to think. Yes, actually, at the same time as the movie itself, there was also a video game release based entirely on the ride that was released for the Nintendo GameCube and for the PlayStation 2. And then going a little bit more recently, like closer to the time that I'm recording this, there's also two comic series based on the ride. One that is based on, one that was made by IDW, and recently one made by Marvel as part of the Disney Kingdom series, which is a 5-part miniseries. There is also, Disney XD actually made some quick little stop motion cartoons where some of the animated characters from their TV shows, like Star vs. the Forces of Evil, DuckTales, and the new Big Hero 6 series, would interact with some of the ghosts from the mansion. So there are some things that Disney did explore a little bit, but they rather want to try to go and treat it as an Easter egg, or if they really want to make a big project out of it, they wanted to have it be associated with the Disney parks. They really want to keep that connection and keep it synonymous with Disney parks and the mansion, have the two come together. And ultimately, I do understand on that front if Disney just wants to keep it as a theme park exclusive. Like I said before, it's a very rare breed, and they want to try to make sure they keep that in mind. So maybe that's the only thing why they didn't really go fully on board with Shannon Tindall's project. And I mean, this is not the first time that something like this actually happened, where Disney Television Animation kind of rejected this idea that did buzz around all around the news, that people are like, oh my god, this was supposed to be a thing, like, and people are going crazy over it. I remember not too long ago, Seth Kearsley originally mentioned about an idea that he had, that he wanted to go and create an animated series based on Kingdom Hearts. And it was a little bit similar to what this idea is with what Shannon Tindall brought up with the mansion, where it's basically you take all the plot narratives from that game and you would turn it into an animated TV show featuring the memorable characters that you would find in there. Not just the Disney characters, but also the original characters that they made for the game, like Sora, Kairi, and Riku, and all those people. But sadly, that project never really happened, and it only ended up as just an idea. And that's pretty much it. And personally, I don't think Shannon Tindall would go and really pursue to create this series anytime soon. Because the thing is that Shannon Tindall right now, he is currently, or as I'm recording this, he is currently at work at Sony Pictures Animation in order to create an untitled movie, we don't know what it is, that's only going to be coming out in 2020. Well, that is, if Sony Animation is even going to survive in 2020. Who knows what the future holds? Nah, but in all seriousness, though, I will say I want to wish the best of luck to Shannon Tindall and his team on his current project, and hopefully things can really work out for him. So, yeah, this was all just to bring up this crazy idea about a series based on the mansion. Now, rather, if we're going to see any future projects related to the attraction, I don't know, but it is a pretty interesting idea, and it does have a lot of potential. But, like many of the ghosts themselves, it's pretty much a dead idea, and maybe it's for the best that it would remain dead. I mean, the thing is, the less projects that we have right now, and the more that we would forget about the 2003 movie with Eddie Murphy, the more that we can actually appreciate the ride as it is. The more that we can feel happy that we would have something like the mansion that's representing the originality and the creativity that the Disney parks has to offer. So, at least we got that going for it. But, you know, not a bad idea. I will give it that. Okay, so for our next story, we're going to be talking about the Walt Disney Signature Collection. And honestly, it has been quite a long time since we've heard anything from the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Since last time, it was at the end of August of 2017 that they would release The Lion King back on Blu-ray and DVD. And it was a bit disappointing that they had to go back to their bad habits of putting a lot of their bonus features onto digital only, since they were going into a great streak with projects such as Pinocchio and Bambi, and then they screwed it up with The Lion King. But afterwards, there's been a long gap since we've heard anything. In fact, it's actually quite surprising that the Walt Disney Signature Collection didn't do anything for the holiday season, actually. You'd think it would be a great time to actually release something, but no, they decided to take a little bit of a break. But now it seems like they are coming back, and it will be a little bit of a while. It's going to be at the end of February, but now they decided to bring in their brand new edition, which in this case is going to be the 1955 animated classic, Lady and the Tramp. Yes, the 15th animated feature created by Walt Disney and his team is finally going to be returning to Blu-ray ever since 2012 when Disney released it as part of the Diamond Edition. Now, the thing with Lady and the Tramp, the special thing that they are offering right over here, not only are they bringing back the classic animated film, but also, they are going to be including three brand new, never-before-seen bonus features onto the Blu-ray discs. And on top of, actually, before I get into that, there is one thing that they also advertise into the trailer that they have released, is that there's going to be three different ways that you can actually go and check out the movie. There is the original theatrical version that you can go ahead and check out. There is also the sing-along version, where they would put in subtitles on all the songs. And then finally, there is Inside, what is it called? Inside Walt's Story Meanings, where that one is pretty much a bit of a combination to a behind-the-scenes featurette and an audio commentary, where as the movie would play out, you would also look into the mindset of Walt Disney and his crew, thinking about what their thought process was when crafting this movie. And they'd done a phenomenal job with Bambi, and that was something that they also included into the Diamond Edition, and that one is equally as fantastic as well. Now, on to the bonus features, the three new stuff that they added, and I'm going to be reading from my source here in Inside the Magic. The first one is called Walt and His Dogs, And it says, through archival recordings and photos, here are the tales of the dogs Walt Disney owned and loved over his lifetime. And that one would actually be very interesting, because one thing I'm pretty sure that would actually do is probably bring up the rumor regarding, or not the rumor, but there is a bit of an urban legend that stated that the opening scene of Lady and the Tramp, where Jim Deere and Darling, they would go and open up their presents, and one of them is actually a puppy, which is Lady. And that one is apparently based on real-life events where Walt Disney gave Lillian, or I think his daughters, a gift, which is actually a puppy. So maybe they'll cover in that one for Walt and his dogs, but we'll have to wait and see. Then there is another one called Stories from Walt's Office. Take a tour of Walt's office suite on the studio lot, carefully recreated to look just as it did when he occupied it. And then there is another one, the third, last, and least, which is probably just one made for kids. It's called How to Make a Meatball and Other Fun Facts About Lady and the Tramp, which is stated, watch a delicious lesson on how to make perfect meatballs with teen chef Amber Kelly and Oh My Disney Show host Alexis Gabriel. Along with these bonus features also include some classic ones that you would find onto the Diamond Edition or even the Platinum Edition. There's one called Diane Disney Miller Remembering Dad, where Walt's daughter shares memories of her father and Disneyland's early days, as well as a look at his apartment above the firehouse. And then there is also the deleted song I'm Free as a Breeze, which would have been a musical number sung by Tramp himself. And then along with it, there are a few deleted scenes as well, where we see some, including introduction to Boris, and then there's also Waiting for Baby, and then another one called Dog Show. And then there are some other bonus features as well, but unfortunately, they're back to their dumb old habits of putting it back to digital only. And I will say, the stuff that they put in digitally, yeah, I think it's half-half. Like, half the bonus features on the disc, the other half, digital only. One of them is the list that it has here includes Lady's Pedigree, The Making of Lady and the Tramp, which is a 53-minute behind-the-scenes look into the making of the movie. And then there is also Finding Lady, The Art of the Storyboard. Then there is also the original 1943 storyboard version of the film. And finally, there is Puppypedia, Going to the Dogs. There is also a few deleted scenes that are digital only as well, including all the different trailers, including the original 1955 trailer, the 1972 trailer, and the 1986 trailer. So that's pretty much the entire thing with Lady and the Tramp. And yeah, once again, I am a little bit disappointed that they would have to go and put in a lot of the bonus features exclusively for digital. And that's one thing, I might have already said this, but it is a bit annoying when Disney would actually do that, because not only are the digital only stuff only allowed for Americans, and as a Canadian, I can't even access to any of Disney's digital stuff, but also at the same time, they put in a whole bunch of them, like the classic ones that they put in. Like, some of them are actually some of the best ones that you would love to know in terms of, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff of Lady and the Tramp. Like, Lady's Pedigree. Like, that one is a great bonus feature that looks into the making of Lady and the Tramp. Or even the 1943 storyboard version. Like, why would you go ahead and cut that out? Like, those are great ones. Or, like, why'd you put them digital only? And I mean, sure, like, probably the best bonus feature that they did actually kept was inside Walt's storyboard meetings. Like, that one, you're going to get a whole bunch of information about the making of Lady and the Tramp. So that's not really that big of an issue, and it is great that they still kept it on the disc. But on the other hand, though, I will say that I feel like the new bonus features in there, they are a little bit weak. I mean, they are cute, and they do add in some facts regarding Walt Disney himself, but they don't really fill in the major substance that would be lacking on the disc. Like, as fun, you know, as cool as it sounds with stuff like Walt and his dogs and stories from Walt's office, they wouldn't even hold a candle to stuff like Finding Lady, the Artist's Storyboard, or even Lady's Pedigree. Honestly, it feels like they're going a little bit lackluster, and I did had a little bit of hope that maybe they would go back to what they did with Pinocchio and Bambi, and that they would put in all the bonus features onto the actual disc, but it doesn't look like this would actually be the case right over here. Like, they would just completely split everything in half and just leave it to having Lady and the Tramp in itself. Now, for me personally, I feel like I don't think I'm going to be interested in getting this new version of Lady and the Tramp, considering that I am someone that already owns the Diamond Edition. And in that one, they do have, like, all new bonus features made for the Diamond Edition, and even all the classic ones that were from the Platinum Edition. So I don't feel the need like I would go and want to have a major upgrade with it. But I will say, though, I'm not discouraging others from buying the Walt Disney Signature Collection. I will say that if you're, like, from what I'm seeing right over here, if you're the kind of person that does not own Lady and the Tramp on Blu-ray yet, and you're probably also someone that would also want to own the movie digitally, then by all means, this is perfect for you. Go ahead and get it. I mean, the main selling point is to own the movie, so I highly recommend you go ahead and actually do own Lady and the Tramp. But if you already do own the Diamond Edition like me, there is no point whatsoever in upgrading. I think I'm going to be fine with the Diamond Edition, and I'm not going to be rushing to go and get the Signature Collection, kind of like with Pinocchio and Bambi. So I think I'm going to be fine with the disc that I already have. But if you guys are excited to go and get your hands on the Signature Collection of Lady and the Tramp, then all you have to do is just wait for it to be out digitally on February 20th, and then it will be out physically on Blu-ray on February 27th. Now, for our next story, I wanted to go and double check if I already talked about this subject, because this was already brought up a little bit that Warner Brothers was considering this idea, and I saw, yes, I did. I did talk a little bit in length about the possibility of this happening, but now it seems like this would legitimately be happening right now. And what I'm talking about, of course, is going to be about Animaniacs. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are actually going to be getting the Animaniacs reboot. So let me just go ahead and read a little bit from my source here on TV Line, because that website actually does say it best, where Hulu on Thursday confirmed that a brand new version of the classic animated series Animaniacs has received a 2-season straight-to-series order. New episodes will begin rolling out sometime in 2020, and they also provided the official description, which it pretty much says, "The Warner Brothers, Yakko and Wakko, and the Warner Sister Dot, three inseparable, irascible siblings, have a great time wreaking havoc and mayhem in the lives of everyone they meet. They have been locked away in the Warner Brothers Water Tower for a very long time, but they have found a way to escape. And escape they do, every day, all day, every day, causing chaos and comic confusion. Yakko, Wakko, and Dot run loose into the city, turning the world into their personal playground. And fan-favorite characters, Pinky and the Brain, will also return to make appearances in each episode." And the only people that have been confirmed to return into this, of course, a lot of the original voice actors are going to be coming back. Rob Paulsen will return as both Pinky and Yakko. Jess Harnell is coming back as Wakko. And Maurice LaMarche is coming back as Brain. At least those are the ones that I saw that have been confirmed, but I'm sure that there are plenty of other voice actors that are going to be returning to go and play their respective characters in this Animaniacs reboot. But on top of that, in terms of the crew, the only people that we know that are going to be returning are going to be the executive producers. Now, Sam Register, the president of Warner Brothers Animation, is going to be executive producing in this as well. But also, Steven Spielberg is actually going to be coming back to produce this as well. On top of other people that are going to be executive producing, which are going to be the co-presidents of Amblin Television, Justin Falvey and Daryl Frank. But that's not the only thing that Hulu actually did for the revival of Animaniacs. As a way to really celebrate it, Hulu just released all the episodes of Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and Tiny Toon Adventures onto the streaming service. So if you want to hype yourselves up and you want to prepare yourself for the comeback of Animaniacs, you can go ahead and watch all the episodes on Hulu right now. So honestly, with this, yeah, it does sound great that Animaniacs are going to be coming back with brand new episodes. But honestly, maybe I'm going to be repeating myself from what I said before. Like, one thing I do feel is a little bit more cautious than I am hyped up to see the comeback of Animaniacs and all that stuff. Because one question does remain, do we really want a comeback of Animaniacs? Because one thing could be for sure is that not everybody among the creative crew is going to return. I mean, sure, like, we are going to get the original voice actors come back, but are we going to get the original writers? Are we going to get the original directors? Are we going to get the original animators? That could be a bit unlikely. And yeah, this is a bit following the trend of reviving animated TV shows, and we are seeing a little bit that's starting to happen frequently with Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network. Now, there are some that are not viewed as well, like, there are stuff like, Teen Titans and the Powerpuff Girls, which, they're not really getting some positive reviews. But at the same time, there are also some that really do work well. Like, a lot of people love season 5 of Samurai Jack and the final season, and they also really enjoyed the Hey Arnold Jungle movie. Apparently that one was very well received. And then of course we are seeing a little bit more reboots coming up and are already existing, including Rocko's Modern Life and also Ben 10. Now rather, if there are going to be more reboots of animated series in the future, that we don't know, but I definitely do feel like this is one of them right over here, that it is kind of made to follow that trend, and they decided to go with a popular show like Animaniacs, which really the main purpose with this, it's really going to be trying to tap onto the nostalgia. Like, that one is really trying to go for the crazy Animaniacs fans, like the people who loved the show as a kid, who enjoyed watching stuff like Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain, and they want to go into that market over there. But is it really going to be as big or as beloved or as popular as the original animated series? That I'm not 100% sure. I do feel a little bit worried about this series because I'm sure people would probably give it such high expectations. And if they don't meet the very high standards that people are expecting from this, then it could spell out danger. And especially the fact that it is exclusive to something like Hulu. Like that, I don't know. Maybe like it's also a big deal with Hulu because they want to go and try to have they want to try to have this big marketing in terms of their own streaming service, like try to take away some of the people from Netflix so that they could come onto Hulu and watch their stuff right over there. So I don't know, for me overall, I feel more cautious than I am optimistic. Like maybe there is a chance that this could actually work out very well and it could stay true to the original and it could turn out fantastic as well. But especially with the high standard and the expectations that people might have with this, I don't know. Like, as much as I could see it be a giant hit, I can also see this be a bit of a giant disaster as well. And it might go a little bit horribly for Warner Brothers and Hulu, but that remains to be seen. I don't know. I just feel more cautious than anything. I'm not going to say this is going to be bad. I'm not going to say this is going to be good. I honestly, I just feel like this is more of a wait and see kind of thing. And I mean, we do have a lot of time, so who knows what's going to happen. So if you guys are anticipating yourselves to check out Animaniacs coming back, then all you have to do is wait until 2020. But if you want to check out the show itself to prepare yourself for Animaniacs, then there is also there's always Hulu that you can now go and check out all the episodes for. Now, for our next story that we got right over here, we're going to be talking about another upcoming animated series. But admittedly, I'm actually a little bit more optimistic about this one. Well, it really does help considering that it did give us a trailer for it. And what I'm talking about is going to be Cartoon Network's upcoming series, Craig of the Creek. And from what the trailer is telling me, it's pretty much this down-to-earth story about a kid named Craig who would team up with his friends to go on adventures to his local creek that he pretty much lives nearby. And from there, we do see a lot of different world building and explorations from all around the different places of the creek, which includes a couch where teenagers apparently would visit. There's also a field of poison ivy, and then they would also go into the sewers. And basically, that's all it is. We just see the adventures of a kid named Craig, and he would go all around this creek with his friends. And I will say, with that one, I could definitely do see the potential, and I definitely do see also the major influence that you could find from plenty of the other shows that Cartoon Network has to offer. And especially with Craig of the Creek, from watching this, there are two TV shows that I find are pretty much very, like, you could definitely see a lot of the inspirations from, or at least a lot of the major comparisons. And for me, those two shows are Steven Universe and Clarence. Now, with Steven Universe, I think the big thing that really does stand out is actually the fact that it shares a very similar art style. Like, you could definitely see characters from Craig that they could fit very easily onto Steven Universe. And I mean, it is true that many of the people that worked on Steven Universe are also working on Craig of the Creek. In fact, I do believe the show is actually created by two of the head writers of Steven Universe. So that could actually be the big case with Craig of the Creek. And you could definitely tell that it is from them. I think the big hint about how is it that it is from the Steven Universe people is actually regarding the lips. Because if you look at the lips of the characters, they're pretty much made the exact same way how Steven Universe would go and create lips, where you do have a straight line as the mouth, but you also have two little curved lines that are made to emphasize the lips. And of course, you also have some of the same structures with, especially with Craig's eyes, it looks like something in the veins of Steven Universe. And the way that they would use simple shapes to craft their characters as well, like, that's how you could tell there is a bit of similarities with Steven Universe. That and also the adventure aspect, because this does seem like the kind of show that would be about the adventures that these characters would go through, and also crafting the characters as well, where we do meet not only Craig's gang, but also the other Creek kids as well, where they would have to go and travel through different places and go fight off some foes, like maybe some neighborhood bullies or something like that, in order to protect their name, in order to protect their own areas of the creek as well. So maybe there are those elements that are added onto Craig of the Creek. Now, in terms of Clarence and why I would see similarities to that is mainly because of the down-to-earth tone. From what I see in this trailer of Craig of the Creek, there is nothing here that would go beyond surrealism, or they would go into the fantasy, or they would make up any sci-fi or fictional elements. Like, this is meant to really show how is it that these characters are pretty much having these adventures that it would be highly believable that a normal kid would have this kind of adventure if he would go on a creek. Like, a kid that would have a neighborhood creek would legitimately have this type of adventure where he would hang out with his friends and he would go into all different places. Like, that could actually be a thing. And it's the same thing with Clarence, where they don't go into any sort of surrealism. Like, everything in there seems like it would be based on real-life adventures, or they would be highly believable stories that a kid would actually go through. So these are the two elements that I feel like that it would have some influence with Craig of the Creek. And I think it's because of those two things why I feel like Craig of the Creek could have a very strong chance to be the next hit show on Cartoon Network. Because the thing is, like, these are two highly popular shows that are currently running on Cartoon Network. I mean, sure, with Clarence, it's going to be finished soon. I think in 2018, it's going to be its last year, and it is going to run its final season. But Steven Universe is, like, one of their biggest selling points on Cartoon Network. So, of course, if it does share the same tone as those two shows, then I think Cartoon Network viewers are going to feel just at home watching something like Craig of the Creek, and it could actually have a very strong chance. So, I just want to say, I just want to wish the best of luck to the people working on Craig of the Creek, and hopefully it could be a new big hit for them. So, we'll just have to wait and see on how Craig of the Creek goes. There's no official release date where they mention about where is it, like, when is it going to come out. But I do believe it's going to be coming out in 2018, so stay tuned. And so, finally, we now have Animat's Pick of the Week. And this week, we are going to be looking into something that is done annually. But if you are an animation fan, you definitely gotta check this out because it really does give you hindsight not only into the process of making animated features, but also an in-depth look into some of the more popular and well-received animated features out this year. And what I'm talking about, of course, is the annual Animation Roundtable. Now, as you guys may probably know, every year, The Hollywood Reporter would release a series of videos called The Roundtable, which is pretty much a look back into some of the movies that have been released this year, and they would bring in several different people from different groups talking about their own movies. So, The Hollywood Reporter would bring in several different directors, actors, cinematographers, writers, visual effects artists, composers, and so much more. And they would talk about the work that they have done for some of their specific movies. And of course, every year they would also make one for animated features as well. And for this year's list, we do have a pretty interesting batch. Now, apparently this year, the round table would include Kyle Balda, one of the directors of Despicable Me 3. There is also Chris McKay, the director of the Lego Batman movie, Lee Unkrich, the director of Coco, Tom McGrath of The Boss Baby, and there are two additional people that I'm actually quite surprised that The Hollywood Reporter decided to listen to people. Now, if you may recall, last year, it was actually quite controversial for some reason that people were actually angry with the people from the Animation Roundtable last year because it consists of nothing but white guys. It's all just a whole series of white males talking about their animated features. It's nothing really serious, like nothing really bad that they've said or anything like that. It's just coincidentally, the panel was just nothing but a whole bunch of white dudes. And surprisingly enough, apparently the Hollywood Reporter decided to listen to that controversy and try to fix things up by adding a little bit of diversity, by adding in two women onto the mix. These include Nora Twomey, or Nora Toomey, of the director of The Breadwinner, and also Lori Forte, the producer of Ferdinand. And what's actually very interesting in here, I'm not going to explain, like, what's going on all of it, because keep in mind, this is actually quite a long video. It is about an hour long, but it is very fascinating. So what I'm going to do is just give you guys a little bit of the highlights. Of course, like I said before, it really does go in depth into the process of making animated features, but at the same time, they would also go into their own individual movies. But this year, they would highlight some special coincidences when talking about their own films. Like, one major thing they started talking about is actually working with kid actors, because it really is kind of a major challenge when working with these kids and recording their lines in order to do animated features, because animated films, like, they would take around 4 to 5 years to make, and around that time, they would go and hire kids that are 11, and that's pretty much a bad time, because that would also be the moment when the kids would go and hit puberty. So if they would need to go and do a bit of re-recording, then the kid would already sound like a teenager at that point. And there are a lot of people that had to work with kids, like The Breadwinner had a kid as a main character. There's Lee Unkrich talking about Anthony Gonzalez in Coco. Tom McGrath would be talking about the kid that played Tim in The Boss Baby, and so much more. They would talk about those examples right over there. And coincidentally enough, since I did mention the fact that they did add in some women onto the panel right now, that was probably the thing that they did close off, is regarding diversity in the animation field and the representation of women in animation. So that is one major question that they did ask, especially to Nora and Lori, regarding how they feel about being a woman in the animation field and how they are represented as well. And also the guys would step in and also discuss about what they're doing in their part to really have diversity be featured onto their animated features. Well, not just that, but have, like, in terms of their crew, like their animation people, not have it be just a whole bunch of white guys, but to have women and people of color working in there as well. And actually, speaking of diversity, that is also another subject that they really went into, because Lee Unkrich mentioned that was probably the biggest mission that he and the people at Pixar wanted to do for Coco, was to make sure that the diversity and the representation of Mexican culture, they really got it right, and to make sure that they don't fall into plenty of other stereotypes. And he even made a little commentary as well regarding his relationship with Jorge Gutierrez, since a lot of people love making that major comparison with the Book of Life. And one thing that he did mention was legitimately really true, and probably the one thing that could kill off this entire battle of Coco versus the Book of Life, is actually the fact that I think it's either Lee Unkrich who said it, or it's probably Jorge Gutierrez that said it to Lee Unkrich, that pretty much this battle is pointless because people are still going out there making more than just one Christmas movie. Which is definitely true. I mean, Dia de los Muertos is a holiday that's no different than Christmas, you know? And I mean, there are tons of Christmas movies that's pretty much an entire genre right over there. So why not make more movies about Mexican culture and about Dia de los Muertos, you know? Like, it doesn't just have to be a coincidence that there are only those two movies that talk about that subject in particular. And even Lori Forte would also mention a bit of her part on Ferdinand as well, to also do the same thing for Spanish culture, to make sure that is actually represented very well. And, you know, when you do think about it as well, there are also a lot of little connections that they would make with each movie as well. Like, maybe, like, one movie has a bit of a similarity to another. Like, one thing that they did mention is the theme of siblings, which is actually pretty prominent in both Despicable Me 3 and The Boss Baby. And they mention on each of them that, like, with The Boss Baby, the use of siblings is actually kind of the theme. It is the core of the entire feature, where we see the entire adventures of Tim and the Alec Baldwin baby and their relationship throughout the entire film. While Kyle Balda would explain about Despicable Me 3, they use it as a way to further develop their already existing characters. Like, he mentioned how at the end of Despicable Me 2, it seemed like Gru had a bit of a perfect life at the end, where he has a loving wife, he has three children that he adores, and he has a great job with the anti-villain society and all that kind of stuff. But then, in the third movie, they decided to strip that, like, to pretty much not strip everything from him, but at least strip his job from him, where he feels like Gru is now back at the bottom, and he has to go ahead and, with the help of his sibling, which in this case is Dru, he would have to go and try to reconnect with his roots, like, go back into the villain side of him that we've seen in the first Despicable Me. And there are also some elements as well that they would mention, and also some personal things that they would go into each character. Like, they would talk about how, which characters they feel very similar to, or which characters they like the most in their own movies. Are there any other connections that they would mention as well, or actually specific themes? Well, actually, yes, there are also some other elements that they would talk about in their individual films, like some of the obstacles that they would have to go through as well. Like, I've already mentioned how Lee Unkrich, his biggest obstacle was to avoid, like, the stereotypes and the cliches about Mexican culture. But then there's also Tom McGrath. He talked about his personal experience and where he would experience the major coincidence that people would heavily make regarding The Boss Baby and Donald Trump. And then you also got Nora Twomey and kind of the challenge to go and adapt The Breadwinner, and how, like, times have certainly changed between the release of the book that it's based on and the movie, considering that the book was actually released back in 2000, before 9/11 happened. And after that event, that's when, like, everything changed. So that was a bit of a challenge, but thankfully Nora actually did pull through. And even Lori Forte actually did mention the obstacles about making Ferdinand. And with that film, since it is based on a little children's book, they already had a beginning and an end, and the biggest challenge was pretty much to find a way to create an entire middle, like to go and create characters for that middle ground. And she would mention about, oh, we did a great job finding that middle of the story and create lovable characters. And that was probably the biggest moment where I'm just there going, you know, Laurie, that sounds great, but I have to highly disagree. You kind of failed on that mission, and my God, I want to throw a chair at each of those annoying side characters. My God. I mean, you can't really say that you created such lovable characters when you have a freaking annoying goat, stupid pointless hedgehogs, and dumb German horses. I'm just saying. So, yeah, I just want to say right now that considering, yeah, there are some movies that have gathered some mixed receptions, like The Boss Baby, Ferdinand, and Despicable Me 3. So don't be surprised if you come in and you might disagree with some of the things that these people would actually say about the film. But overall, I will say that it is a very fascinating look into some of this year's movies. And yeah, honestly, this definitely is worth checking out, even though it is an hour long. But I mean, like, if you are listening to this, you've probably already passed an hour. So, yeah, definitely is, this video is absolutely worth checking out. If you guys want to have a little bit more knowledge into the recent animated films that have been out in 2017 and just making mainstream animated features in general. Or in this case, they even included the making of an independent animated feature, since they also added The Breadwinner. So yeah, definitely go ahead and check that out, which is the Hollywood Reporter Animation Roundtable of 2018. And that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go ahead and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Metzier Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. Now, if you've listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you know what would be awesome of you to do? To go ahead and rate and review this episode. That would be cool. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button in our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!